Hey, hi, this is Indiana Bill, the one and only Indy of the Robert E. Howard fandom. The wheels are turning, and it's almost time for Robert E. Howard Days. Hope you can join us in Cross Plains, Texas at the Robert E. Howard Museum on June 12th and 13th, 2020. This year, our guest of honor is the one and only Roy Thomas of Marvel Comics fame. We're going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of Conan the Barbarian, number one, with Roy Thomas and Barry Windsor Smith. Classic stuff, and you'll meet a bunch of classic people when you're down there. Check us out on the Facebook page, Robert E. Howard Days, or at howarddays.com, and you can get all the information that you need. Hope you can come on down and see us. As they say in Texas, y'all come.
Crom.
Greetings, mortals. You are listening to Bourbon and Barbarians, an actual play recording presented by the Cromcast.
What does Rutger Hauer say?
Time.
Tears in the rain.
To die.
All right. All right, guys. So, it's the middle of the day. At this point, you have burned the Burgermaster. You have bid Arena adieu. You have a laundry list of items that you would like to check off. At this point, where do you go?
Well, going to Marwina.
Marwina needed help.
Sounded like the most pressing thing.
She is a person that was in distress. I checked on her. I wasn't able to get anything out of her other than some prayers and desperate pleas for help, it seemed like.
Yeah, so Marwina is basically the cottage that's just west of the ferry / ford in the southeastern portion of the triangle of the commons.
Okay.
And Josh's character, Uleg, he is stationed basically there at the ford of the river, like the water mill. That's where the smithy is. And so that's kind of his neck of the woods. So if you guys recall in the last session, he basically ran along that east road to the river and then bounced back. So what you're saying is you would want to go back down the east road towards Marwina's cottage, check on her, and then, if memory serves, the religious site / church is the southwest portion of the triangle. Like, that's where the church is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like the center of town, like sort of the south, like the main bits of Coldfield are along that western, like it's the north road, but it's running sort of like the western part of the triangle.
Okay. Yeah. So this is going to be like a 10 or 15 minute walk at a brisk sort of pace.
And again, recall too that you have the mists that have settled over Coldfield and the environs for, at this point, over a year, more like a couple. And so once you stray off the road, all bets are off. But so long as you stay on the road, that's pretty easy because you can see in like 10 or 15 feet in all directions. So you can stay on the road. And you know that if you're walking along that east road and you went on the left, or to say north, you know you're out in the commons. So that's like where all the farmland, like everything is super intensively farmed at this point, because that's like where you can reliably get to, and that's where production can be had. So that's where a lot of people are out, like on the commons in that triangle, but straying to the south or sort of outside of the interior of Coldfield, it gets pretty risky.
To Marwina's,
yeah.
All right, so everybody's together. You guys are able to strike out pretty easily. You encounter, at this point, a handful of different folks that you guys readily recognize. I mean, the common peoples of Coldfield. And, of course, with Uleg and his services to the community, he's very much acknowledged and nodded to and Hail Father and that kind of thing as you guys are passing along. And maybe there's a side eye that's cast towards Brondo, and Grota just gets, like, wide eyes, like,
hello.
You coming hello. Out of the mist. It's basically like,
anybody
like,
want a peanut?
You know, like a hill giant exactly. comes out of the mist. it's worth saying that there haven't been any like monstrous undead, so people aren't necessarily like scared of just dark shapes like that big coming out. They're mm-hmm. more scared of wolves and zombies roaming around. Anyway, so you guys are able to move along, and you get to Marwina's cottage that you last left a fair couple hours ago, Josh. And so it's silent. Before, you had the cries of a distressed mother, but now you're not hearing anything.
Is the front door open?
It's ajar. Yeah, maybe the same way that you left it, even.
I will walk up and knock on the door.
Uleg go first.
So Uleg go you're first. Knocking, and like with that last knock, the door just sort of like opens a little bit on its own accord. And again, it's fairly dark inside there.
You got any, like, you want to do any detect evil, or anybody have any of that?
I can do some detect evil. Let's.
Because something was up back at Burgermeister's house, obviously.
Yep, this is true.
Grota's detect evil is just like, hello, evil? Question mark.
Evil.
Now, Grota, you are very, no, you are very straightforward that way. Are you evil? Yes or no? There's a right and wrong answer to Grota.
Grota will smash.
Yeah.
So, with the hammer that I forged,
mm-hmm.
I'm able to use that to detect evil.
Okay.
And I will do the ceremonial flourish with the hammer as okay. I draw it from the loop that it hangs from.
Okay.
And point it toward the dark maw of this cottage.
Okay. You do that. And so just so we're tracking, we're using the rule cyclopedia here for our spell list, that kind of thing. It says, right. When the spell is cast, the cleric will see evilly enchanted objects, or I would interpret that as also persons, within a 120-foot glow. It'll also cause creatures that want to harm the cleric to glow. Actual thoughts can't be overheard. And remember that a chaotic alignment does not automatically mean evil.
Right.
Nothing is glowing. Okay. Like, even like within the interior of the door being pushed open, you're not getting like a glow of, say, like a spectral shape like laying in wait or anything like that.
Yeah. Not even okay. Hank is glowing.
Nope, he's not.
Slight sheen to Hank.
Yet. Okay.
Like, is there anything, like, is there any light?
No light. No evil, though. So
I mean, anything, is it illuminated at all?
It seems completely dark.
It's dimly lit. Like I mean, there are windows on the periphery of the cottage.
Okay.
And from what I recall from that last session, the way I described it, it's kind of like an open one-room cottage where there's a bedroom space towards the back of the cottage. And that's where you saw Marwina sort of like kneeled over the bed, crying, distraught. And as you walk through the front end of the cottage, that's like where the principal like cooking and living space is. So now that you're like in the door's pushed open, you can see the dimly lit room, but you're not seeing anybody in the room.
Okay. I will go forward into the cottage with my hammer drawn.
Okay.
And I'll look back at these guys, like, not saying anything, but just...
Yeah,
club nod.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you walk into the cottage, and it's clear now that you're in here, like, someone is under the covers in the bed, like, on the far end of the cottage.
Someone's under the covers?
Yeah, like, somebody's, like, in bed.
Is that lump glowing, or is the detect
nope.
still...
not okay. getting anything?
Mm-mm.
So I will... I will pull the covers down.
Oh, okay. So you're walking up to the body, and as you're approaching the bed, it's a small bed. It's not like in real world terms like a twin bed. It maybe is slightly larger than that, but it's the single bed that's within the cottage, and you can see a large adult shape there that has the quilt sort of pulled up and around it, and you can see as you get closer like a tassel of hair that belongs to Marwina. And so you're coming up and pulling the covers back. When you do that, she's just laying there And while she's not sobbing, you can tell that she's just sort of like, not catatonic, but just laying there and in another place.
She doesn't move or react to the
covers. I mean, you can see that she's alive, but she seems not here.
Not with it. Yeah. I'll speak to her.
Non-responsive.
Yeah.
Marwina, are you okay?
She's mumbling, and you can get a couple fragments that she says something along the lines of, like, she's gone. Who would take the only light of my life? And she's gone.
Who's gone?
You know that Marwina has a young daughter that she's quite protective of. Mm-hmm. And she's not here in this cabin. And you can deduce that it's likely her daughter.
The daughter?
Yeah.
I ask that anyway, mm-hmm. to see if it garners a response.
She says, I only went out to run to the general store to get some grain, and that's all you can deduce. And so, knowing kind of like when the common house opens up, like mid-morning, that kind of thing, like, mm-hmm. before people are going about their day, they might care for maybe a hardtack biscuit or like a mug of ale or something like that. That would be like in the fair morning hours that she might have done that. And so that seems to be the timeline that she would be specifying here.
Before sunrise?
No, but just like at sunrise, because people aren't doing much like after hours these days. Like, they're kind of constrained by the light, right? With the way that things are. And also, just with what you know about Marwina and her daughter, she's quite protective of her daughter. She is a single older mother of this youngster, who's probably she's an adolescent, like, mm-hmm. 6-8 years old, something like that. So it's not like Marwina would have been going to the common house like after dark or like after hours. It would have been something that would have happened like in the morning before the chores and the day to day.
We can get her back.
Guys, can we see anything else? Is there anything else in here that might give some sort of clue?
Windows broken?
No, there's no like signs of a home invasion.
Hank's just kind of hanging out towards the back, because, I mean, peopling is not his thing. So he's going to step out and wander like around the outside of the house, between the house and the fence, looking for footprints or something.
So go ahead and... Like, go ahead and roll 3d6.
12 or 14.
Okay. Is that equal to or under your wisdom?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you're walking around the edge of the fence, and there's not many dogs to be had in Coldfield at this point in time. You see some tracks that might belong to either a dog or perhaps like one of the wolves that oftentimes, you know, encroach upon the village, but you don't see like other footprints from people.
Curious.
Yep.
What if we continue on our way? Let's think about what's close to here.
Can we hear anything?
You can hear occasionally sounds that are coming from the water mill. Again, sound carries weirdly here with the way that the fog has settled in. So you can get the creak and the groan of the water mill spinning over at the ford. And
is that a common,
yeah,
sound?
And Uleg's, okay. Uleg would be like there at the smithy, like pounding. So if he would have been on the job, you would hear the ting, okay. ting, ting of the smith at work. But you're not hearing anything going currently. But you're far enough away that you're not hearing like activity along the more heavily traveled north road.
Marwina, come with us. And our plan now is to head back west to the Kalish folk, right?
Yeah, because Marwina can stay with them.
Roll 3d6.
10.
Is that under or equal to your wisdom?
Yes.
Probably probably wouldn't be like people don't look too kindly on the Kaelish folk. I mean, like you're okay with it,
yeah.
And I guess all three of y'all are okay with it being younger members of the community and being outsiders in some form or fashion yourselves. But there is a distinction between the Kaelish folk and the quote unquote common people of Coldfield.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they're on an encampment on the edge of town, even though they've been here just as long as a lot of folks. You could try, but that would be rather rare, even in this dire time.
Does anyone else in the Kaelish encampment share my?
Yeah, the Kaelish are more
your bro code.
Yeah,
like they're they themselves oftentimes feel taken advantage of. And aren't necessarily like they've just been kicked down mm-hmm. a time or two too many to have straight up trust of the people's.
Okay.
Like the, again, like to use the term, the commoners
right.
of Coldfield. Okay. There is a clear classist situation
okay.
that okay. is long standing and at play within the borderlands.
But Marwina, you could come with us. You can stay at the church today. We have some other items to attend to, but we can look for your daughter as we go. But don't stay here alone. Come with us.
She says, you know, please bring her back to me. But she's just cuddled up in bed. She's clearly wanting to stay in her,
just stay
in her bed.
I won't like force her if she's not like coming. Yeah, no, I'm not gonna like abduct her from her house.
She does not want this old woman does not want to like leave. She is clearly covered up, semi catatonic, mumbly, and like not saying get out of my house. But
right.
she can hardly gather the strength to carry on this limited bit of correspondence with you guys.
Okay, then I'll tell her we'll look for her. We'll find her. In the meantime, don't let anyone in the house unless it's us. Don't let anyone in.
She closes her eyes and nods.
And I take my leave. And as I walk out, I'm going to pull a dagger from my bag. And I'm going to carve the holy symbol of the forge
okay.
on the top of the door.
Okay.
And nice. When we've all left, I'll pull the door closed.
Uh-huh. I like it.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Good move.
Let's go to the Kaelish folks.
Let's go to the Kaelish folk.
Lead on, Brondo.
Lead us there, Brondo.
Yeah. All right. So from my recollection, the Kaelish encampment is basically on the west sort of outer side of
sort
where
of like,
the
yeah, that bottom
the church
corner.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So this is kind of the periphery of town. You're able to traverse back along the Eastern Road, and you get there. And I think I mentioned this before, but the general setup here is there's a variety of these like sway-backed wagons that have like canvas stretched over like the arching bent frame. So these are like Conestoga wagons that are in a more permanent placement. Like they're not hitched up ready to leave tomorrow morning. They are like in close proximity, almost lined up as if like abodes in a fairly systematic fashion. And so the way that it is of course you have a variety of these wagons, and centrally within that is almost the common area of this encampment where you could have like there's a common fire, like there's a hearth that's been there that's long standing. It's almost like the communal cooking area because people aren't necessarily cooking in their wagons. They come out and that's where they're doing their daily business. And these people are storytellers. These people are extended families by nature. It's quite clannish the way that things are structured. And so you would be hard pressed at any day or any time of like day or night to not find people around that central sort of hearth and like campfire in the center of the encampment. And so this is your home. So you just roll in, Brondo, with your crew, and there's a handful of folks that are around the central hearth. It's the midday, so maybe you've got a handful of folks that are still like tidying up after like the midday meal. And sort of on the periphery of of the fire. You can see a couple of the tufts that you left a couple of your pots of potato shine with.
Yep.
And they're a little bit slower to react. I think they've been probably dipping into at least one of those pots.
So I'm going to acknowledge and be like, hey, guys, you remember us?
Yeah. And so if you recall, they were they had like home rolled cigarettes, and they're both over like smoking side by side. And so they point up and say, you know, they're motioning with their hands.
Yeah.
They're gesticulating towards you.
All right. So you got hang on.
Are they in track suits?
No.
They're all from Jersey.
What do you am I conforming to archetypes and stereotypes too much with this?
No. It was just the way you moved your hand with the cigarette that was really
I'm trying they are like the Kalish folk are what's the right word? Like they're pretty emotive, right? Like they are able to convey they talk with their hands.
Yeah.
They talk.
You did a good job. I applaud your movements.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys are able to sidle up next to the couple guys that are there.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, Eva, see her now? You know, they have their own language. I don't know the extent to which you've picked up the Kalish.
Well, it's vernacular. More, yeah, it's kind of like, more like signs in baseball.
And they very much, again, talking with their hands, they almost have like that kind of like sign language that they can mm-hmm. communicate with too.
Right.
Like the stereotypes that are thrown towards the Kalish folk, like side eyes are cast against these people all across, not just the borderlands, but also the summerlands to the south. Like these people were ran out of many locations because they were seen as like, you know, thieves and rogues and oftentimes they're just classified to thieves. And of course, a lot of thieving, there's associated like mm-hmm. hand signals and there's entire languages that are built within the organized crime.
So that way we don't have to really chat it up if we go outside of our encampment.
You're part of the family too at this point. Like you really are at this point like Kalish by association.
Okay.
So
and the three of us are cool because we're with him.
Yeah, that's the feeling. I mean, nobody's gonna step to Grota.
Yeah, I mean, we've all been here long enough that you know, especially with me having to come to town daily, you know, it's like they hear stories of Grota. So I'm like, yo, guys, we're back. We need, we need to speak to Madame Eva as soon as we can because we had to leave this other lady in her house alone. We're looking for a kid now. I know that's probably a lot of info to drop on you guys that you've been imbibing.
Their eyes are big. They're like, it's like, man, this is getting heavy.
So I just, I'm like, all right, I've been with them too long. So I stop talking and I do the hand signal.
So, I mean, yeah. And that brings up the point that at least, Uleg and Grota, like they are known commodities within the Kalish. Like Hank might get the side eye just because Hank's a weird ass kid. Like
right, he's a. I mean, he has this. Hank is his. I'm not. Is that a new necklace that you have on, Hank?
I mean,
it matches your robes.
Yeah,
and half your face.
Hank is fluent in Kalish, even if they think he's weird.
Yeah.
He knows what's going on.
Is that a cobalt ear?
No, it's a tooth.
Oh, that's right.
That doesn't rot.
So they're motioning towards towards the wagon, and again, like canvas stretched taut to make a fairly accommodating like living space. It's probably like
it's a trailer park.
Yeah like Grota is not gonna be able to truly like fit into this thing, and Uleg and Brondo are gonna have to squat like a little bit hunch over, but if you were like Hank's gonna be able to almost walk in standing up,
right?
And it's double wide in size, so you're able to come down the middle, like you're able to walk in. So you push like the canvas flaps of the doors sort of aside, and you're greeted to like a warm, inviting light as you walk in.
It smells good.
It does, actually. It smells of rich oil, and you can see that there's a little bit of wafty sort of smoke up at the top of the wagon.
It's always a little warmer
there. Yes, and again, this feels very homey. This is a safe space. That's the feeling you get. Like, you walk in here and it's almost womb like. You're coming back into like a place that's comforting, and it's lit, and just the overall feel of the place is not necessarily as cold and clammy and pale as what is just right outside of the drapery.
It'd be on the subreddit Cozy Places. Is
this, this is a cozy place. Good call, man.
Madame Eva's is lit.
Yeah.
So who's walking in first?
Well, Brando? I'll walk in first, yeah. I'll walk in first.
When you walk into places, do you go, Brando?
No, I let friends. Other people do that.
So you walk in, mm-hmm. and the very first thing that you see is, like, on the far side of the wagon. Like, there are cushions that are set. Like, that's the kind of thing that you would sit on, cushions. You don't have chairs in this space, but there are cushions where you can see it, and they're arranged. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4 cushions that are arranged, and Madame Eva is at the far end. So you almost have like this pentagram sort of shape, and in the center you can see an array of cards that are laid out, and she's been waiting.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Good evening, Madam.
She nods. She says, please enter and be seated.
Thank you.
You have questions about your party, your future, and the fate of our lands.
I do. We do. I guess I go first around, may we sit? She invites us to sit.
Oh, yeah. She does the gesturing with her hands. She wants you all to take a place. And so this will be easier for some of you and more difficult for others. And so for Grota to, like, properly sit on one of these cushions, he's almost going to have to be, like, a woman, like, on the beach, like, in a centerfold shot. Like, just for you to, like, you're a big dude, right?
I am, like, but I really don't understand your analogy.
Like, that you're going to have to, like, sit and then, like, kind of prop up on your side. Like, I'm not saying you're
supposed to. No. That was what I thought you were demonstrating.
It's your calendar photo shoot. You have to. Yeah.
You both have diametrically opposed views of what this looks like.
That's the beautiful thing about the RPG, man. Like, whoever's listening right now, too, they've got their own vision of, like,
Grota, like, doing the Sports Illustrated.
Yes, you get to decide how Grota sits down on this cushion.
Choose your own sitting adventure.
Although, I mean, that would alter the story a bit if you were.
Is Grota man spreading, like, taking up half of the wagon? Is Grota sitting cross-legged?
No, Grota's considerate. He'll do crisscross applesauce.
Nice.
So apparently I'm first to walk and sit down, and then Grota and Uleg, and then Hank.
Grota, go second.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll go third. Hank fourth.
Hank's at the end.
Yeah. Hank, don't get weird.
Get.
Man, I'm already there.
Be yourself, Hank.
Be yourself.
Best life now.
So, Uleg, I know you have your beliefs, but be a little open-minded here. We're about to experience some things that you might not have knowledge of.
I will try.
Are we playing euchre?
Not yet, Grota.
Okay.
Just hang back. Get as comfortable as you can.
Very
I mean, tight. Within reason. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Can I have some feet, of your cushion?
Your feet go here.
Over here.
Go here. Yes. Move. Yeah, there you go.
I mean, and she's, like, to her credit, Eva is, like a fifth grade, like, math teacher. She has, like, infinite patience with this, like, shenanigans.
She's seen
out.
All this stuff before.
Yeah, I mean.
And worse.
Those are likely, like, what her, like, great nephews that are outside, like, she probably.
Yeah. 100%.
So, okay, so you guys
Dolch
get sit down.
And Vern.
Dolch and Vern.
Right. Yeah.
You make a little bit of small talk about the guys that are out front, and she just has a little bit of a smirk, and she says, I suspect that you would like information to help you in bringing Arena back home.
Correct.
So, with that, she motions to the deck of cards, and they're worn and they're quite aged, but they're at the center point. And she says, "If you please, place cards in between the three of you." And so, like that, if the circle is Madame Eva and the central square is the card deck, she's basically saying to, like, place three cards. Yep, exactly.
Okay.
Yep. So shuffle the cards, put your psychic energies into them as much as you would care, and then place a card here, and unfortunately since Mike's not here, he's visiting us through the ether,
through the internet, the medium,
we'll put a card in between Josh and the
face monitor. Down.
Yeah,
I'll show it to you, Mike, without looking.
Okay.
Actually, you guys can go ahead and flip them. Go ahead and flip them.
We can flip them now.
Yeah. The key is we need three cards here.
Yeah.
For the story to play.
Brondo, card. Grota, card. Uleg, card.
Card.
Hank.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, that's bad. If you guys recall, like, Eva's been having this conversation, but she's not, like, looking at you. Like, her eyes are milky white, and it's almost as if you're staring into the eyes of... Like almost a, I don't want to say like a dead animal, but like I keep thinking.
Well, when a dog or a cat gets older,
their
eyes kind of, they get a bit more milky, cataracty.
That's right.
Yeah.
But she's not scary. Like it's.
But she has sight beyond sight.
Yes.
So
the veil is thin. She can see. Mm-hmm. She can see on the other side.
Sword of Omens.
she says, "Let us begin with the member of our encampment." And she looks over to Brondo. And so what is the card that you have in your hands?
Madam, I have the Five of Cups.
The Five of Cups. "You should seek for a carefully hidden plate of great worldly wealth. I see a blazing fire protecting this place."
Find plate.
"Great fortune."
Blazing fire.
"Fortune," she says.
I seem to remember her sounding different.
I know. Yeah. I'll fix that in post.
She's got a cold.
I was talking like this. Yeah.
Okay, I'm okay with fortune, mm-hmm. but we need... Do we know Marwina's daughter's name?
We do not. We didn't ask.
Roll a 3d6.
Okay. Ooh. 11.
Is that under your intelligence?
Yes.
Goethe is Marwina's daughter's name. My daughter.
Goethe.
So, yeah, that's her name. You remember. I mean, maybe you applied a poultice at some point.
To Goethe.
Yeah.
I'm okay with the fortune, but we still need to find Goethe.
Goethe was Herta.
Eva looks to Brondo with sight beyond sight, and she says, "Let us move now from the most fortunate son."
She about to break into song.
It ain't me.
She looks at Grota, and she says, "And what card do you have?"
"I have the Five of Swords."
Man, like pair of fives. Staying alive. She doesn't say that. That's me.
And then before she delves into the aether, she
turns into Dolly Parton. Sings
us a song. So you have the Five of Swords. Is that right?
That's what it says on this here card.
Mm-hmm.
Grota had to count the swords.
"Blinding brilliance I see within the heart of this one. In the face of darkness, evil has been cast over the place, but you will fight under the might of light."
Me? Ruh-roh, Raggy.
What a fight with might of light.
That sounds more like Uleg, yeah.
She turns.
Maybe it means that you'll fight with Uleg.
She turns to the holy man. She says, "Now we come to the."
She didn't come up with anything for me, so I'm excited to hear this.
Hammer brother.
Hammer. Brother to hammers.
Brother of hammers, please, if you will. What is your card?
Queen of cups.
The goals of the nemesis. The darkness loves a light and desires it. Great subtle plans are in motion about you. Plans that the dead may find warmth from the living.
That's definitely the most ominous one.
This isn't the kind of stuff she says all the time.
Usually she's just talking about what's in the latest People magazine.
Right.
Yeah.
You look so skinny, Brondo. Have some soup.
And she shifts her eyes, or her psychic energies, what have you, to the last of the party. The slightest of the party.
Hank's gonna, like, put his arms out and crack his knuckles. And, like, throw it on me. What's going on?
And here we have the wild card. I cannot see more than two steps beyond the edge of my wagon as far as this one is concerned.
Neither can we.
She looks, like, across the party and she says, your fate is tied to this one. Watch him especially.
I mean, that's pretty on point.
Is she talking about Mike or is she talking about Hank?
She's talking about Hank.
Okay. Well,
she's not talking
Mike. Who's Mike?
Yeah, I'm confused.
Gotcha.
Are we breaking the wall?
She apparently can't.
Hank, don't tell your parents about this.
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean,
they won't understand.
They will not get it.
Like, who knows? Is she fueling, like, the fires of this crazy kid? Like, at this point, this is the kind of thing you would tell, like, an egoist, like...
Yeah. You're the chosen one.
How do you respond to that, Hank?
I mean, he kind of puffs up, like, heck yeah. Somebody finally recognizing.
If he's Strahd's, like, Horcrux and tied to the mortal world... We're gonna kill him.
What if we're gonna kill him? He could do a good. He could do a good thing. Our fate is. He could find the plate, or
he could. That's true. Also, darkness loves a light and desires it. The dead may find warmth from the living.
Yeah, that yours sounded bad.
Yeah,
and yours was focused on the might of light. Is that right?
Yes.
I can't get away from the rhymes.
Is that right?
This time.
That's a tie.
That's because of your shirt, man. For those, since this is a visual medium, they can't see Luke's shirt. It says Run D&D.
But it looks like a Run DMC shirt.
Yeah, it's dope.
It is dope.
All right. And the most fortunate son received the clue about the loot.
Yep.
The fortunes of Ravenloft. The places.
Fire protects it, though.
Please tell me that's the outro song.
What's that?
Fortunate Son.
Fortunate Son? Yeah. We'll see.